I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host here weekdays, 9 to 11 o'clock. It's Wednesday, it's the next hour. 10 to 11 o'clock, we'll do what we do every Wednesday, which is Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. I may have to change the title of that segment to Over-Medicated America. Is it catchier? Got stories. I misread a headline, and it wasn't until last night as I thought I was putting my show together, and I actually went ahead and read the story that I was planning on covering for today, and boy, did I get it wrong. We've got a medication problem in this country. We'll talk about that, and then some more positive things, ways that you can help to maintain, improve, and recover your health like we do every single Wednesday. So stick around for that. Quotes of the day today. I thought this one was kind of interesting before we get into the meat of the show, which I imagine many of you can guess how we'll start out today. But Tony Benn. Must be an English guy, based by some of the spelling in his quote here. But Tony Benn, B-E-N-N, said, "I don't think people realize how the establishment became established. It simply stole the land and property off the poor, surrounded themselves with weak-minded sycophants for protection, gave themselves titles, and have been wielding power ever since." And I think when we really kind of peel it back, that's essentially what's happened. The theft is continuing. Another quote of the day today to lead us into our show. John Maynard Keynes. This was an economist here. You'll hear people talk about Keynesians. These are people who believe that government spending is great for the economy. The economic advisor, what's the guy's name? Pretty sharp guy Trump had as an economic advisor. I saw him on Fox one time, and he said, "Oh, yeah, Donald Trump, he's a Keynesian." This is a big problem, but people want to run away from that. Anyway, John Maynard Keynes said, "Lenin was certainly right. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the basis of existing society than to debauch the currency. This process..." Well, let me get up here. I've actually... my notes here. For some reason, the margins on this expanded. I can't get it. I'm going to take a mulligan here. John Maynard Keynes said, "Lenin was certainly right. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the basis of existing society than to debauch the currency. This process engages all the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction and does it in a manner," and this is the important part here, "this process engages all the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction and does it in a manner not one man in a million is able to diagnose." So I guess maybe that answers the question, how many people in the United States actually understand inflation? Apparently it's around 330 of us. About 330 people actually understand what inflation is, and this is why they will always opt for this. Because we still have people out there talking about Biden inflation and the Putin price hikes. So inflation, that's the big story of today, came in at 9.1%. I got to tell you, I thought yesterday the White House, the disaster that is their spokeshole for the White House, came out yesterday and was saying, well we're kind of expecting a big number here. I actually thought it was almost a little bit like a kid trying to confess to a crime, but maybe, you know, exaggerate something so that when it's not quite as bad, there's actually relief. And you do that as a child sometimes. You know something's coming your way, so you try to make something really big, and then when that doesn't happen, you think you're going to get the grace from your parents for it not being the worst-case scenario. But I was wrong. I was wrong. Inflation came in at a whopping 9.1%. And there's several things I have to say about this. Reporting on inflation today on conservative talk radio is not going to be anything unique, because the vast majority of conservative talk show hosts are going to lay this squarely at the feet of this one dementia patient that is in the White House, unfortunately. Because, as John Maynard Keynes says, not one man in a million is able to diagnose inflation. But one of the things, or a few of the things, that they're really not talking about in the mainstream news that I think is something we should all keep in mind is last July, I went back and looked at it. This inflation's lasted for a while. They told us it was transitory, but it turns out it's just like the transitory house guest that just will not leave. Every morning you wake up and the couch is still occupied. This inflation's been around for a while, so I went and looked it up last July. We're in July now. I guess this is actually a June number of inflation, but we're in July. Last July and June, inflation was around 5%. Now, historically, they've told us, they've given us bogus inflation statistics, but it's generally been, they've told us, you know, 1.5%, 1.6%, these kinds of lies they've been telling us. But they admitted last June, July, that inflation was already around 4.5%, 5%. So my point being, we're actually compounding now. You understand what I'm saying? See, prices a year ago were already up 5%, which is considered inflation here because the Fed, in all its infinite wisdom, says it just tries to keep prices rising at 2%. For some reason, we put up with that. But it was actually 5% last year. Now we've tacked 9.1% onto the former 5%. So if you want to know what your cost of living, it's compounding on itself now. Something that nobody's ever talking about. Another thing that is not mentioned in mainstream news when they talk about inflation, and I am repeating myself, I understand, they say this is the worst since 1981, but we are not calculating inflation the same way we did in 1981. That is comparing apples to oranges. If we calculated inflation now like we calculated in 1981, inflation would be reported as around 18 to 20%. I'm still waiting for shadowstats.com, John Williams, the economist there, to go back and do these calculations using the 1980s method for calculating them to see what it is apples to apples. But we were already at about 16, 17% prior to this number. So I would imagine we will fall somewhere in the 18 to 20%. So when they tell you it's the worst since, just understand if it's prior to 1993, we're calculating it different to make it lower, to trick people. And so basically the rule of thumb is if the government gives you a number, particularly with respect to inflation or unemployment, the rule is to take whatever they say and double it. Sometimes it's a little worse than that, but just a rule of thumb. Rule of thumb, take any number that comes out of the government, whether it's unemployment or whether it's inflation, and just double it. Now, when it comes to like things like military contracts, you quadruple it. Maybe a 10x in the case of the F-35 program. Same with domestic projects. If they tell you they're going to spend $1 billion upgrading some kind of a highway system, you understand that's going to be at least $3.5 billion. That's just a start. So anyway, we're not comparing apples to apples when they give you this number and tell you it's the worst in 40 years. Under the hood, energy costs dominated the rise, but the rent index rose 0.8% over the month, the largest increase since April of 1986. I ask all of you out there who continue to repeat the line, it's Bidenflation, how does Biden increase rents? Motor vehicle maintenance and repair index increased 2% just in June, its largest increase since September of 1974. What did that rascally Joe Biden do to cause the cost of motor vehicle maintenance and repair to go up? I'm not letting Joe Biden off the hook for this. He's making it dramatically worse, and particularly when it comes to energy prices. But just to understand my point, this is a consequence of money printing, which was done under the Trump and Biden administrations, not to mention Barack Obama and his zero interest rates for his entire term. The index for dental services increased 1.9% in June. Largest monthly change ever recorded for that series dates back to 1995. And real wages for the 15th month in a row, this is Americans' purchasing power, fell by a record 3.6% year over year in June. Understand that anything that you see, any measurements where they say real, that is, means it's taking into account inflation. So real wages have now fallen for 15 months in a row. I was looking up the history of, as I was trying to figure out, is this the worst inflation maybe we've ever had? Because I understand that we're not calculating it the same way we calculated it back in the 1980s. Is this worse than the 1980s and prior to the early 80s, late 70s? Was inflation ever substantially worse? So I actually did a little bit of a historical dive here. Since the founding of the United States in 1776, the highest year-over-year inflation rate observed was 29.78%. This was in 1778. In the period of time since the introduction of the CPI, the highest inflation rate observed was 20.49% in 1917. Notably, both of these cases of rapid inflation coincide with major wars. The Revolutionary War in the first case and the World War I in the second case. Now you understand what we have decided to do is have endless wars. We don't need one big world conflict going on. No battles on our own shores where we have to raise an army as they did in the Revolutionary War. Now we just have endless wars. The war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on COVID, all of it facilitated by printed money. Every single one of those things. And all adding up to more than the Revolutionary War or World War I every single year. This is why we have inflation. And I've always brought back to this. I can't say it enough times, I guess, these days. As Henry Ford said, it is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and money system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. So the criminal, political, donor, and Wall Street class loves nothing more than to hear people reciting the term Bidenflation or Putin price hikes. Because they know that that means that they can continue to abuse you. There will be no accountability. They will continue to get away with this. And so anybody using those terms is really just contributing to the economic destruction of this country because we cannot figure out exactly what's going on. It's incredibly sad. And then my favorite quote of the day today came out of the Libertarian Party. I've been telling people what's coming out of this new, improved Libertarian Party. They sent out a tweet. If both the Federal Reserve and the IRS faced elimination, If both the Federal Reserve and the IRS faced elimination and you had 5 minutes to prevent one of the two from being wiped from the earth forever, what type of sandwich would you make? Amen. Amen to the Libertarian Party. Anyway, 9.1 inflation, reported actual inflation somewhere in the 18 to 20%. This will continue. This is going nowhere. We have now gotten to the point where inflation has been with us so long, we're starting to compound. High inflation from last year is being compounded by high inflation this year. There is no relief in sight. I saw one of the funniest headlines of the day on MarketWatch this morning, where it said that Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve chief, has, I believe the quote was, zero patience, unquote, for high inflation numbers. This is the organization that has sat by and did nothing for the first 10 months of diagnosed, announced, recorded inflation, and they have done only small, small rate rises, getting nowhere near. It's almost funny. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates 75 basis points this last time to so-called combat inflation, and the inflation rate has now actually jumped by 60 basis points since they did that. I don't know. I told you, admitted economics nerd, you may not even understand what I'm saying, but the inflation rate is actually growing at about the same rate that they are raising rates. It's getting worse, and it will continue to get worse until the Federal Reserve actually raises interest rates above the stated rate of inflation. It's like a beach ball. If you want to get it under the water in the pool, you can't pinch it from the bottom and try to tug it down. No, you have to jump on top of it and submerge it with your entire body. Federal Reserve is not prepared to do that. The idea that they have zero patience for inflation is pandering to let you know they're going to let you stew in this for a long time. Thank God nobody actually blames them, because only one man in a million can actually understand what's going on. Be right back. It is difficult for me to watch governments abuse their people. I don't care if it's in China or Israel, or I don't care where it is. It's an anti-government show. It is it's a libertarian show dedicated to showing you the disastrous effects of particularly huge governments like we have here in the United States. But I have a tremendous amount of sympathy for people. But I got to tell you, if people don't take the time to understand what's happening and make some changes to, anything, even voting patterns, if they refuse to accept the facts and instead just blind allegiance to politicians or political parties, my sympathy is tempered. I'll say that. I do have a tremendous amount of sympathy for people who are going through tough times right now. It's just really, really sick. This is not difficult stuff. It's really more a breaking of the conditioning to believe that just one person's responsible for this, that a change in political parties changes this, when the evidence is completely to the contrary, that this is a bipartisan wrecking of the economy right now. And on the cultural issues, you got me. The Republican Party's so much more sane on cultural issues. When it comes to economic issues, there's not a lick of difference between these two parties. But while my sympathy for people is somewhat tempered by the fact that you continue to choose these people, the animals, saw a headline yesterday, they've owned these pets for years. People are giving up family dogs they adopted long before the pandemic, mostly due to inflation, shelters say. Oh, the dogs. People, don't give up your dog. A child, I can understand, but a dog? The other headlines on this thread were, when will inflation peak? U.S. consumers see light at the end of the tunnel, New York Fed survey suggests. The New York Fed says, oh, people think this inflation is going to go away very soon. This was printed a day before they come out with the 9.1%, which again, you remember the rule of thumb, double it. And then with red-hot inflation, more Americans are relying on credit cards to pay rent and buy food. Well, I guess, on the upside, if I wanted to glass half full this thing, at least pet owners who can no longer afford their animals are giving them over to shelters. How long before we're Venezuela and the shelters are actually cleaned out because people are eating these pets? We may not be far from that. People are so weird. Let's see this headline here. When it comes to money, oh, where is this? The Market Watch has just got, I think it's just a kind of a glimpse into human nature. I don't know if you find this as interesting as me, but it's just funny. Money does weird things to people, even in relationships. Money is freedom. Money is important. It's not I know plenty of people that have amassed great wealth. We're not happy people. Money is not happiness, but it is a level of freedom and security that can help with happiness. People get so weird. Here's one. My husband, the people ask questions to Market Watch. My husband and my father never really got along. She's talking about her husband, okay? My husband and my father never really got along. How do I ensure my husband of 26 years never gets his hands on my inheritance of several million dollars? Here's another one. I love this one. The pettiness of people. This is a double petty. My friend got us free theater tickets. When I got home, she texted me, quote, can you get our next meal or activity? Am I obliged to treat her? This is the person's question. So somebody took you out to the theater for free. You don't want to be held on. Do I have to treat her next time? I mean, come on, people. We're trying to run a society here. Oh, gosh. I am freaking out. I started investing money with a robo-advisor in September. I've lost money. How am I doing? Should I keep going? Yeah. You're losing money. Keep on going. The sad thing is, I mean, there was another one that somebody was asking if they should get a financial advisor. If you got a financial advisor that has had you rope-a-dope this inflation and stock markets dive, then God love them. Keep that person. But 90% of financial advisors just tell you, Joe, just keep shoveling money into the stock market. They told you that all through 2007, 2008, 2009, until it bottomed in 2010. And then when it went up, they told you, see? I mean, you lost half your money, but it's going to come back. But it's not just investments here. The crypto carnage continues. There was an interesting story out of that. The founders of Three Arrows Capital have apparently made a good old-fashioned run for it. The bankrupt crypto hedge fund founders have not been cooperating in the liquidation process of the firm, according to a Bloomberg report this week. And to do one better, their whereabouts have simply been unknown since last Friday. Those founders, Kyle Davies and Zhu Su, have not contacted representatives set up to help liquidate the firm by a British Virgin Islands judge last week, the report says. However, lawyers for the two men have reportedly say they intend on cooperating at some point. A photo posted by Bloomberg this week shows the company's headquarters seemingly abandoned. AC, that's Arrows Capital, has been just one of the major firms, joining names like Celsius and Voyager that have collapsed as a result of the plunge in Bitcoin. Insolvency proceedings in the British Virgin Islands have started, as has Chapter 15 bankruptcy filing in the U.S. Liquidators went to Three Arrows offices in Singapore, which appeared dormant. The door was locked, computers were inactive, and the mail was stuffed under the door. People working in the surrounding offices said they hadn't seen anyone enter or exit the office recently. Lawyers for the two men were on a Zoom call with the liquidators last week, but it was unclear if Zhu and Kyle were even on the call. Quote, while persons identifying themselves as Su Zhu and Kyle were present on the Zoom call, their video was turned off and they were on mute at all times with neither of them speaking despite questions being posed to them directly. I got to tell you, those are not the kinds of things you want to hear if you were an investor in this cryptocurrency hedge fund. You know, crypto is hard to trace. That's one of the big selling points of crypto, the anonymity. As a libertarian, why I'm cheering for it, although suspicious of it. But when you've got a group that's managing your crypto for you, and it's a largely untraceable asset class, that could pose a problem. We're going to see if they are. If you want to disappear, it's much difficult. More difficult as a traditional hedge fund to sell a bunch of stocks and make wire transfers through the banking system and get away with it than it is to just lock up the doors, send everybody home, transfer your crypto anonymously to wherever you want to parachute out to get it. Bitcoin has pretty much answered the question, is it an inflation hedge? That certainly has not become the case. It's currently trading at $19,230. It's down just about a third of 1% today, but it has cracked back below 20,000. It went back up above 20,000. It's now back below 20,000 over the past year. As inflation has reared its ugly head, cryptocurrency has gone from 67,582 peak in November to 19,230 today. Solving that question on whether or not cryptocurrencies is the place you need to be with market turmoil and inflation. I keep saying it. I cheer for a decentralized currency. I just don't understand this arbitrary valuation put on cryptos. There's a fantastic video that somebody put out on Bitcoin, and it is a reenactment of the scene between Neo and Morpheus in The Matrix, explaining the fiat money system. It's really great. I should probably play it here. It's quite the advertisement for Bitcoin. I'm not sure they can deliver on the promise made in the video of freeing ourselves into cryptocurrencies at this point. It may turn out to be true, but it is very well done. Anyway, but don't worry. Even though inflation is ravaging Americans at home and crypto con artists are fleeing, with the money that people have invested with their platforms. There's one group of people around the world that are doing just fine, and this will make you feel a little bit better about everything when I come back. Stick around. What's your frequency? Can it be sharp and so dream? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am admittedly not somebody who keeps up on entertainment news. It's kind of weird when you get to that age when you start to, you hear a list of people up for Grammys or Oscars, and you've just heard of none of them. So I don't keep up on entertainment news. So Dana Lash yesterday told me about the woke apology coming from one of the creators of Friends. I thought this was kind of interesting. What was this woman's name? Kaufman? Marta Kaufman? One of the co-creators behind the mega hit sitcom Friends apologized in an interview about the way the show handled a transgender character 1 week after she pledged a donation to make up for the series' lack of racial diversity. Gee, I guess she should be ashamed. You know, Friends might have actually been a really popular show if she just included more people of color and trans people, treated them with more respect. I mean, this is one of the biggest shows in the history of network television. It was obviously accepted well. It's amazing these people go back and do their backwards apologies. Really, my problem with Friends, I'll just go ahead and tell you, I watched it when it was on. I've tried to watch reruns. It didn't really resonate with me. I think acting is pretty bad in that show. I think I enjoyed it at the time. I was young. But the biggest beef I have with Friends is Friends is a chicks show. I don't know if people have noticed this. I'm a big Seinfeld fan. And I don't know how many relationships with females I've had that were beginning to blossom. And I would throw out a Seinfeld reference because you can reference Seinfeld with any aspect of life. It was such a genius show dealing with so many of our daily occurrences. If you have not ever seen the Seinfeld show, there are still people out there who haven't seen it. Do yourself a favor. Lighten up the mood as we stew in our own juices here in this country these days and become a watcher of Seinfeld. You can find it on some streaming services. But anyway, I'd be right at the cusp of this new relationship with a woman, and I'd throw out a Seinfeld reference, and I'd tense up. Is she going to get it? She could be the one. And she'd come back at me with a Friends reference. It just as always, men are from Seinfeld, women are from Friends. That's really what it has turned out to be very apparent to me. Where is that single beautiful woman who understands a great Seinfeld reference and doesn't hide in the banality of the Friends franchise? While inflation is ravaging us here in the United States, Biden says, reporting today, Biden says, oh, those numbers are out of date. No, sir. No, it is you, sir, who is out of date. It's just a little interesting to me. This is old news. Inflation's not that bad anymore. Gas prices have come down a little bit. So this can't really be. It's just interesting. This is just days after this jobs report. It's funny how the jobs report that portrayed the headline number was so good, 372,000 jobs created. I've picked apart this report over the past few days as we've looked into the actual details of it and shown that it is actually not a good jobs report. But anyway, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, politicians of all stripes always do this. If something comes in good, it's timely and shows their great successes. If it comes in bad, it's out of date, it's wrong. It is amazing to me that our political class survives year after year after year. I know you don't like the current occupant of the people that are in charge right now, but you'll put other very similar people in charge that just have different rhetoric and be disappointed in them as well. It's really amazing to me what Americans will put up with. But the inflation is real. We're all feeling it. The pity I have for small business owners trying to plan for any level of growth or consistent profits, having no idea what something will cost weeks from now. It's just heartbreaking. But anyway, while we are stewing in our inflationary juices here, I just wanted to let you know the Ukrainians are doing just fine. It was yesterday or day before we talked about the high-level government officials in Ukraine buddies of Zelensky, that great hero, fighter for democracy. I mean, yes, he shut down opposition political parties, and yes, you can't have gay marriage there, and yes, he did shut down a bunch of the media in that country, and yes, he has been presiding over a Nazi government that has been trying to genocide Ukrainians in the East. So all those things, yeah, but he's still a hero, they tell us. It turns out some of the top officials have been buying multi-million-dollar Swiss chalets in Ukraine, so inflation doesn't seem to be bothering them a bit. And then there was this. The Biden administration isn't just propping up Ukraine's military and aspects of its wartime economy alongside the huge sums of humanitarian aid being regularly sent for the internally displaced refugee problem. The U.S. is now going to pay Ukrainian healthcare workers. How does that make the nurses here feel? You know, I don't know. I mean, is listening to the show a lot like listening to someone tell you that your spouse is cheating on you just over and over again? I know that can get annoying. I mean, day after day, the show is just, it's just in my face, and I can't help it as a libertarian to point out that your government and all of your institutions are just really screwing you all over. You red people, you blue people, you black people, you white people, you young people, you old people. It's tough love, my brothers and sisters. And just like somebody who you've had a friend, I think of this as a woman's issue. You got a girlfriend, you know, the husband's out catting around. Don't think that's exclusive, though. An awful lot of wives out there, a little extracurricular stuff going on. But, you know, you're telling your girlfriend, dude, he's cheating on you. Why do you stay with that guy? That's me. I just keep asking the question. I mean, it's right in your face. You're like the abused spouse. He doesn't mean to. He's under a lot of stress at work. I'm always making excuses, so I apologize if this show is getting a tad bit annoying, like it's constantly reminding you that your spouse is cheating on you. But if it makes you feel any better, the Germans and Europeans are all being abused by their governments, too. Deutsche Bank's Jim Reed said that July 22 is the day gas is supposed to come back online. Could be the most important day of the year. Here's what's happened over in Europe. They have shut down Nord Stream 1, where I believe Germany gets just about all of its natural gas from. They've shut it down for some maintenance issues. 10 days. 10 days to work on this pipeline. And the nervousness is that Putin might not open it back up. The Germans have been pretty involved in this altercation down in Ukraine, too. What happens if Russia does not reopen this thing on July 22nd? So you understand, the Germans in particular and the Europeans are just looking at this date just going, oh, man. What if he doesn't start pumping the gas again? It's just so funny. They're hat in hand to Putin. They're blasting him out of one side of their mouth, supporting NATO, sending arms and weapons and money into Ukraine to kill Russians. And then at the same time, you are going to turn your pipeline to us back on, aren't you? What happens if Russia cuts off all gas on July 22nd? The day even Bloomberg has now dubbed Europe's, quote, doomsday scenario. Here's a sample of what Wall Street expects to happen then. European stocks plunging 20% immediately. Junk credit spreads widening past 2020 crisis levels. The euro shrinking to just 90 cents before a full-blown recession slams the world's second biggest economy. That's Germany. So we're not alone in being in an abusive relationship with our governments. And what I love that this story says, and all this power in the palm of Putin's hand, almost as if he knew precisely how much leverage he had back in February, while Europe was, as always, completely clueless. You know, there was a lot of talk during the Trump terms of Donald Trump playing chess while everybody else was playing checkers. I never saw it. I continue to not see that. But when it comes to Vladimir Putin, he is the chess master, and everybody else appears to be playing checkers. The Russian economy is doing much better, and their currency is strong. Middle East is gobbling up Russia's oil and gas. They're getting more dollars for it than they used to, and they're setting up a payment system to avoid the U.S. dollar altogether. Russia, I don't know how close we are to checkmate. I'm no chess master, or I don't know much about it. But it feels like the board is being set up to where Putin ends up coming out looking like the master, and we are the checkers chumps. I'll be right back. You can't stop us now.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
You know, before you come back on air on a radio show, you start to kind of think, well, how do I open this segment? What I started to say was, okay, so, you know, next hour we're going to focus on health stuff, as I do every Wednesday with Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. So I'm going to stop telling you about how you're being abused by your government in the next hour and do something more productive. But then I started looking at my notes and I go, oh, no, I'm going to tell you again how you're being abused by the medical establishment. Most people are kind of catching on to that. But anyway. We'll get to that after the top of the hour here. There were stories yesterday. I was looking at them this morning. First image from NASA Webb Telescope reveals thousands of galaxies in stunning detail. Now, I looked at pictures of these things. I don't know if you've seen these. Now, there's a trick with a lot of this space stuff. Essentially, it's taking computer data and creating a visual representation of it. I think we get the idea that they've just got a giant Canon camera up there, and they're just snapping photos, and we ooh and ah. But I got to tell you, I look at these pictures. It looks like what people used to airbrush on vans back in the 1970s. I'm fascinated by space stuff, the idea that we're hurtling through space, and with all apologies to my flat Earth friends, that we're rotating around this big star, and so it's actually kind of a corkscrew thing. Imagine where the sun is going sideways and we're kind of trailing it in this elliptical thing. I'm fascinated by space, but I just look at these pictures and I go, really? This is what we've got at this point? And I did stop and think of myself because there was another headline that said, water seen on distant planets. Now, I think that's a liberal interpretation of the word seen. I don't know we've really got a Polaroid. Is that dating myself too much? I don't think we've got a picture of water. I guess they've looked at some signatures or some digital stuff and said that it indicates water, and I don't doubt there's water somewhere else. But can we swing that camera around and just take a picture of the debris left from the moon landing while we're up there snapping pictures in space? I'm just saying. At the risk of being a conspiracy theorist here, I'm just saying there are some problems with the moon landing, in my opinion. Now, the jury's still out with me on that one, but we seem to be getting pictures of faraway distant galaxies, and hell, now we're seeing lakes and streams. But as far as pictures of what we left on the moon, I mean, I guess I could create those as easily as anything else. I can't help myself finishing this one. I don't know if I get... I need to be psychoanalyzed. I need to get on the couch for some probably in-depth psychological counseling to figure out what drives me, because even myself, I'm mystified. I believe it is a quest for the truth to expose corruption and to try to tell people where you've been duped. This is my conscious brain, but maybe subconsciously I'm trying to self-sabotage somehow. I'm scared to go see a psychologist because I think they're going to medicate me. More on that next hour. Anyway, you know, there's a lot of speculation that Trump is going to run again in 2024. It's pretty much, he's said as much. And what the Trump supporter tell me when I object to this is because I say, well, you know, I mean, he did hire the swamp. I say, well, he really learned from his first 4 years. And I got to tell you, I don't know if I'm seeing evidence of that. Has he got a thicker skin now? You know, criticism just rolls off of him as he stays focused on the issues. I mean, is Trump right now spending all of his time really working to get the January 6th people out of prison and maybe examining the horrific casualties and dangers from his Operation Warp Speed? That must be what he's spending all of his time on. Oh, wait, no, it's not. He's in a social media feud with Elon Musk. Apparently, Elon Musk has said it's time for Trump to move on. He has expressed some support for Ron DeSantis, and so Trump used that opportunity. I guess he just took a break from freeing the January 6th protesters. I'm sure he's tireless in that effort. There's evidence of that somewhere, maybe. You can email it to me if you know of that. But this was Trump tweeting out, or I guess Trump socialing out. What do you call that? Socializing?
When Elon Musk came to the White House asking me for help on all of his many subsidized projects, whether it's electric cars that don't drive long enough, driverless cars that crash, or rocket ships to nowhere, without which subsidies he'd be worthless, and telling me how he was a big Trump fan and Republican, I could have said, quote, drop to your knees and beg, unquote, and he would have done it. It didn't stop you from giving him the subsidies, did it? No, it absolutely did not. I've pointed this out quite a bit, that Elon Musk, for all the conservatives out there who believed that he was going to be your big savior of your First Amendment rights, I say, you know, you might consider not trusting a billionaire from Silicon Valley that has made his entire living off negotiating deals with the government for taxpayer cash for his products as he leads you into the Green New Deal. Maybe Elon Musk shouldn't have been another savior. But Donald Trump, sir, he gave him the subsidies, but now he's mad that Elon Musk is supposedly turning on him. Yeah, he's learned a lot. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Wednesday. Every Wednesday, we do this one little segment. It's probably my favorite part of the entire show, certainly something I'm incredibly passionate about, and that is about people reclaiming their health. We have an unhealthy state here in Mississippi. Everybody could be doing things to reclaim their health and escape the medical system. I'm here to try to inspire that or give you some little cookie crumbs to follow to find the information you need to fix your own health. I start every show by explaining to you I'm not a doctor, not a scientist, not a biologist, not an immunologist, not a virologist, not a surgeon, not a nurse, not a therapist, not a mental health professional. I am in no way, shape, or form qualified to advise you on your personal health condition. I'm just trying to give you some tools, try to get you to start doing your own research, as bad as the medical community hates that. Because there are ways that you can address your health fate. Quote of the day today for the health show is from William Osler. He's a doctor. He's an MD. I'm not. He is. William Osler said, "The person who takes medicine must recover twice, once from the disease and once from the medicine." Don't hear that very often, do you? Let's start the show off today. I really misread a headline. I was looking what I'll do during the course of the week. I'll either get on a topic, and a friend might bring something up, and I'll think, oh, that's a good show. A listener might email with something, and I'll think, that'll make for a good show. But I'll find headlines, and I'll just clip them and save them to a document and open them later. And I saw this headline. It says, "The Age of Distractopression." Distracti, basically, dash, pression. And what I believed this to mean when I just saw the headline and clipped the story was, kind of dovetailing on what I talked about yesterday in Tech Tuesday, the inventor of the cell phone has said, you need to put down your phone and get a life. And what I thought I was going to find when I read this story was that we are so distracted, our minds constantly engaged with politics and social media and all these other things. It's just unhealthy for us. This is what I expected to find. That is not what I found. It's actually worse, in my opinion. I'm going to read to you a little bit of this story, and basically what it is, well, let's just get into the story. You'll see what it's about. If you're wondering which pills, this is from DNews, DNYUZ.com. If you're wondering which pills and how many of them Americans have relied upon to make ourselves feel better since COVID-19 arrived, the answer, in short, is yes. I'll read that again. If you're wondering which pills and how many of them Americans have relied upon to make ourselves feel better since COVID-19 arrived, the answer, in short, is yes. And what they're saying is just everything. We've just medicated our way. Instead of, you know, actually stopping the insane psychopaths in the health establishment from creating the fear campaign that they did, we all devolved into masses of anxiety and depression. And we turned to our loving masters in the pharmaceutical industry. Quote, "I should have gone back on medication sooner in the pandemic than I did. that was said by Leah Bello Handelman, 36, matter-of-factly. Miss Bello Handelman, a nurse who lives in Brooklyn with the two small children, had been off and had been on and off Prozac for her anxiety since her 20s. Shortly before the pandemic, she had weaned herself off in time for her first pregnancy. So she wasn't taking anything when the pandemic struck, even though her life was operating in full crisis mode. She worked in an urgent care center, and the story goes on to talk about the stresses that we've seen stories of with the medical people during a time of COVID, treating all these patients. Eventually, she just got so distracted. This is the purpose of this title, Distract Depression. She got distracted and got off of her meds. She said, we just put our heads down and did what we had to do. By August of 2020, her husband encouraged her to go back into therapy. After a complicated second birth, she decided she needed more than just talk. Her therapist, she said, quote, was never opposed to me going back on medication, but she was trying to get me to do mindfulness and meditation, stuff that I just don't do. She turned to Prozac again. Now she said, quote, I'm a different person. Now, this is the problem here. She's been on and off Prozac since her 20s, so well over a decade. Obviously, it's not curing anything. Now, some people may have believe they're having some benefits from these drugs, but I'm going to read a story to you in a second. There are alternatives to that where you do not suffer the side effects of these drugs as well, but this is just the point. This is what Americans have been convinced to do. God love her therapist who said she was trying to get me to do mindfulness and meditation, but this patient says, stuff that I just don't do. I just won't do those things. A pill is so much easier. The reasons behind the decision to start or restart psychiatric medication are often not reduced to simple cause and effect. She, quote, this is from this woman again, I'm definitely medicated because of COVID, but I'm also medicated because I'm a woman who was a nurse who had babies in the middle of COVID and a traumatic birth. She's one of millions of Americans who started or restarted psychiatric medications during COVID's long and dreary run. Tracking exactly which pills Americans are swallowing these days is difficult because much of this information is privately held. But from companies that provided data to the New York Times and from other existing research, it's possible to begin to assemble a picture of our medicine cabinets and by extension our medical health, our mental health. First, the broad strokes. In 2019, the CDC estimated that 15.8% of American adults took prescription pills for mental health. And they figured this out. Let me see if I can get down to this. During this time of COVID, those prescriptions skyrocketed. There's some numbers down in here. IQVIA, a global health technology and clinical research firm, found that in 2021, a total of, get ready for this, I have had an outdated statistic that I have read many times or recited many times on this show. But the last statistic I had seen was there were 250 million prescriptions for anti-depression meds, for psychotropic drugs in this country. 250 million prescriptions. Now, obviously, some of these are refills. It doesn't mean 250 million Americans are on these things. It's how many times these antidepressants and these psychotropic drugs are prescribed. But I was working with pretty wildly outdated information. IQVIA, a global health technology and clinical research firm, found that in 2021, a total of 337,054,544 prescriptions were written for antidepressants in the United States through the course of the year, representing a steady annual increase since 2017, when that number had been 313,665,918. So we've seen an additional 20 million prescriptions for these mind-altering drugs. Some age groups, the change has been more pronounced. Since 2017, there's been a 41% increase in antidepressant use for teenagers included in the Express Scripts data. Consist of nearly about 19 million people. For this time, 13 to 19-year-old bracket, the first 2 years of the pandemic, there was a 17.3% change in anxiety medications. It had been a 9.3% rate of change between 2017 and 2019. And I'm going to go ahead and read this story. This is so sad. So sad to me. One 13-year-old rising eighth grader in Colorado currently takes the antidepressant Paxil and the stimulant Adderall. She also takes melatonin, a non-prescription supplement, to help her sleep. Before the pandemic, she had started taking Adderall to help with her ADHD, but when her school switched to remote learning, she struggled. Quote, "It just felt like one of those days where you sit home and you don't do anything. It felt like they were like that was every day, like I was stuck in some endless cycle of sitting in one place. For me, everything felt a lot more pointless. I didn't feel like I was in school. I felt like I was in a dream, so I didn't feel like I needed to do my assignments because I didn't feel like anything I did at the time actually mattered." Nice job, Thomas Dobbs. Nice job, Anthony Fauci. Sitting with her puppy helped, but her teachers told her it was too distracting on screen. Ultimately, her mother decided to try her on Paxil. "She's an anxious person," said the teenager's mother. "She gets stuck in her own head and her thoughts loop. She gets frustrated with schoolwork and she doesn't want to do it if she doesn't think she can do it perfectly. It was affecting her mental health and she was cranky and depressed and she got her period early," she said. "It was just so many things at once." The pediatrician recommended she come off the Adderall to determine whether the Paxil worked. While she was off the Adderall, her grades slipped. She recently started taking it again. She said the main downside of Adderall comes at mealtimes. Quote, "Last year when I was on it, I couldn't eat anything, so my sister would make me smoothies so I didn't have to chew. I just felt too productive to eat. I had no appetite. Instead, my brain was like, you have to do everything right now. My body was hungry, but my mind was not." And this is just a whole story about how people have sought these pills in response to completely pointless lockdowns and alienation and social isolation for everybody prescribed for this disease that was 99.99% survivable for everybody under 70 years old. But that we've turned to these things. This story goes on. And one of the sub-headlines in this thing is "The Triumphant Rise of the Antidepressant." And this, I don't know if anybody's looking around. I do not feel like we're a well-adjusted, happy society. These kinds of stories that I do probably offend some people, may turn some people off. A lot of people have used these things. Look, I've had people who've used them. I've taken, Zoloft, I think for a period of a month. And the hurdle for taking it was somebody else was taking it, and I thought, well, I'll just try it. I was a little stressed out at the time. I don't think it really did anything to me. I don't know if it really made me feel bad. It didn't make me feel... This was long before I discovered natural health strategies and certainly have been mentally clear for the past 17 years now because I don't shove my pie hole full of nasty foods. But I don't really judge anybody for being on these things. And I'll say it one more time. Every time I talk about these things, don't start, stop, or adjust your dosage on any of these medications without intense supervision because that's when the crazy happens. But this has just become this thing, and this poor little girl at age 13 is being jerked around on all these different medications with no earthly idea how this will affect her developing brain going forward. On Adderall, off Adderall, so you could see if the Prozac works. And when the Prozac's working, but they're withdrawing from the Adderall, she gets back on the Adderall. This is not working. This is an experiment on our children. What I thought was an article about being so distracted by social media and phones and just life in general that we're getting depressed from all of the constant distractions actually turned out to be an article that was saying, well, how terrible it was that people got distracted and got off their meds for a little while. Now they're back on their case. Now they're back fully medicated again. Now, this story, I guess I'll go ahead and follow up. I kind of need to take a break, but I'm going to go and get into this one because there is another way. And it does not involve big pharma. It does not involve horrific side effects for many people on these drugs. It does not involve a chemical dependency on one of these drugs. Have you ever known anybody trying to get off some of these things? I know people who are taking Effexor and Wellbutrin, and I watched them. It took them years to get off these medications. Years. They knew they didn't need them anymore, but when they got off of them, their brain would go haywire. They'd like see flashing lights and just have like brain snaps. and had to go back several times and then try desperately to wean themselves off over the course of years because these things infest your brain. So there are alternatives. When Zheng Zhu was serving in the Canadian Armed Forces as a paratrooper and infantry officer, he experienced a series of traumatic events in rapid succession. His best friend and fellow officer took his own life. A soldier under his command was injured during a live fire exercise, and a close friend's father was kidnapped. He felt like the world was collapsing around him everywhere except at the gym, where he trained in competitive Olympic weightlifting. Quote, "The only thing I had that anchored me was weightlifting, because that was the only place where I felt safe." He slowly discovered what he described as, quote, "the healing properties of strength training." Psychologists have long established that exercise is beneficial for mental health, and over the past decade, research has also shown that it can be a valuable tool for addressing post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, despite weightlifting's associations with violent bursts of brawn, growing numbers of people who have experienced trauma are finding that pumping iron is a balm. For many, the sport's healing power comes down to the fact that where trauma has left them feeling helpless, powerless, and weak, lifting helps them feel strong, not only physically, but also psychologically. "Lifting gave me a sense of agency," said Mr. Zhu. "It gave me a sense of control." And in time, he said, these feelings led to his recovery. And this goes on, this story goes on to explain the benefits of physical activity, of exercise, of strength training, resistance training, and its tremendous benefits on the brain. But I got to admit, making time to go to the gym for three times a week, for an hour each time, I try to go about an hour a day, 5 days a week, finding the time to do that is a significantly more of an investment than taking the 30 seconds it takes to crack open a bottle and pop a pill. But the key to adjusting yourself, to having some sense of control over your own feelings, your own emotion, your own mental well-being, is in exercise and diet. It's not in that bottle from Pfizer or Merck. And this is just such a, I'll admit it, this gets to me, particularly when it gets to these children that we are putting on these drugs. I know a lot of people out there, you don't understand, Mike, my child needed Adderall. He couldn't sit still for 8 hours a day in a desk with boring teachers. Yeah, nobody wants to sit in a desk for 8 hours in a school with boring teachers. I'm not saying all teachers are boring. Don't get after me. I know it's summertime. Some teachers may be listening. Great teachers out there, but you know what I'm saying. You take a child full of the energy that children have, you strip them of a whole bunch of the activities for the past couple of years, most particularly in 2020, early 2021, you strip them of all of these social bonds, you strip them of the ability to participate in sports and all these other kinds of things, and then you see their mental decline and you decide to pop them on a pill. You see them just in a typical year, anxious in a class as they grow and try to figure things out, and they don't have the tolerance to sit still for I can't sit still for 8 hours. I can't stand it. I've been in meetings. I got to get up. I got to move around. I got to talk to people. I got to do something interesting. Popping them onto a pill, these Adderalls and these Effexors and these Ritalins, is just such a disaster for our kids. This article is really saying how great it is we're back on our medications. I could not disagree more strongly. I'll be right back. Do you want to flash a light on? Take a look, it's on display for you. Coming down. I got a short segment here. I'm going to finish out a little bit of this story because there's one part of it I don't wanted to read to you as well. Talking about these antidepressants, these psychotropic drugs that we're gobbling up like Skittles in this society. Prozac was developed to answer what was then the prevalent theory of depression, that it was caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain, specifically too little serotonin. Prozac and similar drugs are called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That's where you get SSRI, meaning they block the reabsorption of serotonin in the brain. Quote, when these drug companies began to market SSRIs as drugs repairing a so-called chemical imbalance, if you look carefully at the early ads, they say, quote, depression may be caused by, unquote, or, quote, We actually don't know what causes depression, unquote, in the fine print. That's what Professor Harrington in this article said. Sorry, I don't have his first name. But the FDA made it easier for drug companies to advertise directly to consumers in the language of, quote, chemical imbalance, according to Professor Harrington, had a really big impact on how we made sense of our mental distress. As the psychiatrist Dr. Peter Kramer put it in, quote, in a piece called Listening to Prozac, his landmark 1993 book that helped crystallize the cultural moment, Prozac was on Nightline when you went to sleep and on the Today Show when you woke up. Within the first 2 years of Prozac's existence, 650,000 prescriptions were written for it per month. In 1993, Dr. Kramer was asking careful questions about who should use Prozac and why, but almost 30 years later, he recognizes that the dispensing of antidepressants has grown significantly more casual. Prozac and its cousins like Zoloft and Lexapro, given out to treat depression but also anxiety, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and other disorders, are now a banal sight in American medicine cabinets between the Band-Aids and the Tylenol. And he goes on to talk about how the fact that doctors just say, well, they've been around for a long time. People have been giving them. They seem to be fine. There's no stigma attached to these things. We just dish them out like candy. They have never proven any kind of, they cannot identify any chemical imbalance in the brain. I've played a clip, I don't have it handy today, where they did an interview on the street outside of a psychiatrist convention. And they caught these psychiatrists outside and they said, can you explain the chemical imbalance in the brain? And several of the psychologists said, well, we don't know if there really is one. How do you use a pill, a chemical pill, to correct a chemical imbalance in the brain if you don't know what the chemical imbalance is, if it's never been proven? That's the science behind antidepressants. They say they can cure you, they can fix a chemical imbalance that they can't actually identify. They've got some theories. They think it might be this or it could possibly be that, but they don't know. But they give you a chemical, and they're giving your children a chemical to correct a chemical imbalance that they can't identify. This is an absolute train wreck in this country, and I would imagine it's going to continue because the medical establishment, much like they have with the vaccines, where if pharma and the FDA put their stamp of approval on it and ship it out in containers, they think it must be perfectly acceptable. And a lot of doctors out there, you just walk in. And if you've ever gotten an antidepressant, when you go into the doctor's office, do they submit you to any kind of test of your brain chemistry? Of course not. You just go in and you say, man, I don't have much energy and I'm kind of sad sometimes. Well, didn't your husband just die and you lost your job? Yeah. Okay, well, I've got a pill for that. It's actually called life and we do have our ups and downs. There are times sadness is a acceptable human emotion. No way to escape it. Pill's not going to help with that. But your doctor doesn't ask you to submit to any tests to identify a chemical imbalance and then to carefully choose the medication that targets that particular chemical imbalance. No, they do know that testing because they can't. And even if they could, they can't identify what that chemical imbalance is. They just tell you that this fixes it. It's one of the most bizarre things when you understand just that simple fact. And as I said, psychiatrists will admit this if asked. Doctors may admit this if they even know. You're attempting to cure a disease they can't even identify. What they can't identify is the brand name of a drug because they're constantly on your news telling you that this makes you a happy bouncing ball. That was the famous Zoloft commercial. Really sad stuff. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're doing Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. We do it every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock. If you hear anything on the show you want to explore further, you want me to send you a link to something that I cover, you just email me, mikemadison@wyab.com. I try to kind of describe the articles I'm looking at so you can just go ahead and check them out yourself, and I'm happy to help if I can. Or if you've got questions or show topics, you can let me know. I try not to be really – I don't want to be predictable and boring. I don't know if I'm successful at that or not. But I do have some go-tos. My constant calling out of this over-medication, particularly when it comes to these psychotropic drugs, is one of those things I go to quite often, and there is another one as well.
and it might be entirely predictable because I had several listeners send me this article over the past week, a story that came out on The Guardian on the 9th of July. More than 80% of urine samples drawn from children and adults in a U.S. health study confirmed contained a weed-killing chemical linked to cancer, a finding scientists have called disturbing and concerning. You think? A report by the CDC found that out of 2,310 urine samples taken from a group of Americans intended to be representative of the U.S. population, 1,885 were laced with detectable traces of glyphosate. This is the active ingredient in herbicides sold around the world, including the widely used Roundup brand. Almost a third of these participants were children ranging from 6 to 18. Academics and private researchers have been noting high levels of the herbicide glyphosate in analysis of human urine samples for years, but the CDC has only recently started examining the extent of human exposure by glyphosate in the U.S., and its work comes at a time of mounting concerns and controversy over how pesticides in food and water impact health and human health and environmental health. Quote, I expect that the realization that most of us have glyphosate in our urine will be disturbing to many people. That's what Leanne Shepherd said. She's a professor at the University of Washington's Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences. Thanks to the new research, we know a large fraction of the population has it in urine. Many people will be thinking about whether that includes them. She co-authored a study back in 2019 that found that this glyphosate exposure increases the risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they've studied this stuff. I had Dr. Stephanie Seneff, an MIT researcher, on here that talked about the destruction to your gut microbiome that this weed killer does. And this has been out since the 1990s. We have raised an entire generation of children now. They are now young adults that have been raised ingesting this herbicide. Paul Mills, lead researcher of a study, said that at the time there was an urgent need for a thorough examination of the impact on human health from glyphosate in foods that people commonly consume. And it goes through... The amount and prevalence of glyphosate found in human urine has been rising steadily since the 1990s when Monsanto Company introduced genetically engineered crops designed to be sprayed directly with Roundup. And this is another one of these things. As I say, I hate to be predictable, but apparently about 80% of you are running around with this weed killer going through your system, as are your children. This is the argument for organic food. I saw an article yesterday. I didn't clip it. I certainly should have because it would have been good to juxtapose to this story here where it said, we need to embrace genetically modified foods. And I saw just in the sub-headline that it said something along, you know, in order to feed the entire planet, we need these crops that are drought-resistant and resistant to this and resistant to that. I'm not against any kind of breeding of crops that are more drought resistant, but that was not the main goal of genetically modified food. The main goal was to sell more weed killer. Used to be that these crops, corn, soy, you had to be very careful to keep the weeds out of your fields. You had to go around and very carefully spray this weed killer so you didn't destroy the crop itself. You just targeted the weeds. That's very labor intensive, and you don't get to use a whole lot of Monsanto's product that way. What they did was they genetically modified these things to where you can just coat these crops in this weed killer, which means that you and I now eat it in non-organic foods. And this isn't everything. If you eat foods out of a bag or a box and they are not certified as organic, meaning they have not been treated with these weed killers, you are ingesting weed killer in your food. Now look at the health. We've already reported that this generation of children is the first ever that is less healthy and is expected to have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. For years and years, we had always been getting a little bit healthier and advances, and most particularly in sanitation, refrigeration. Those were the big things. They'll tell you it was modern medicine that added to our quality of life, but the thing that dramatically improved our life expectancy was sanitation, was refrigeration to keep foods from spoiling and killing people, and certainly emergency medicine is absolutely fantastic if you've got a broken body.
They can heal you, and coming in pretty bad shape these days. It's a great time to be alive if your body gets broken. But if you're getting sick, if you're caring about your day-to-day health, it's not a good time to be alive. Unless you take your health into your own hands. This weed killer is also sprayed if you're eating breads. One of the ways that to speed up the drying out of wheat to make breads, they just spray it with this weed killer to desiccate the wheat so that they can grind it up faster, get it into the bread, into the Wonder Bread packets faster. And you're feeding your kids copious amounts of these foods. According to Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who was on this show, she does not just attach this to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, although many studies have, but a whole host of health problems, including mental problems. Because this glyphosate gets into your system, kills off much of your good gut bacteria, and that has a direct implication for your emotions and your brain health. So maybe instead of antidepressants, maybe you come off of the... Take a break from the weed killer in your diet and your kid's diet for a little while. See if that doesn't perk up the old brain a little bit. 80% of us. Organic food is a tad bit more expensive. Depends on what you get. I've been an adherent to organic food from when I first started back in 2005. And I'll tell you right now, my children ate a lot of organic food that was on sale. Pretty much, I didn't plan out a menu. Prior to going to the grocery store, I went to the grocery store and found out what organic products were on sale, and that's what I ate. So if you're concerned about inflation and spending any more money, but it would be nice maybe you ditch the $700 worth of medications you're on every single month. That might save you a nickel or two, too. Anyway, be careful of this stuff. This is why I am predictable on this issue. I do not believe there is any justification for ingesting large amounts of weed killer. And most people are doing it unwittingly. It's in all kinds of stuff you eat. If you're not eating organic food, you are ingesting this weed killer. And it is not, it's not a net positive. I don't think anybody is suffering from a lack of weed killer in their diet. I'll be right back. From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, final segment here for the last week. I'll tell you right now, I was battling something. Something tried to come after me. Started out a little bit in my nose, a little bit of a runny nose. Got down into my throat a little bit. It was kind of like an exorcism. This thing was moving around. I could feel it moving. I was attacking it at every turn. Never got a hold of me. I'm still got a little bit of a runny nose. But I jumped on vitamin D, vitamin C, all those kinds of things. But I ran across this clip, as I do oftentimes, for Dr. Eric Berg. You can check him out on YouTube. He's got a wealth of information. I don't know how that guy does anything else except put out videos that are short, succinct, and address just about every issue you could be facing. So we're about to play this one, The Best Remedy for Your Lungs, Infection, Asthma, and COPD. Nutritionally, you can do things even for your lungs. So we're going to play this in a second because this is one of those things. I could feel it going down into my chest. Before I was armed with information, knowing that nutrition mattered, that even getting myself out into a little bit of the sunlight for a period of time during the day, last week, I make sure I go out and get a little bit of sun on my face and my skin just to boost my vitamin D. And then I supplement with some vitamin D as well. Before I knew that, what I used to do was I would feel something coming on and I would just figure out, okay, what am I going to miss? Because in about 2 days, I'm going to be in the bed. I'm going to have, you know, bronchitis. I'm going to have the flu. I'm going to have whatever. I might as well go ahead and start canceling things now. I just knew it. I just knew the sickness was coming. Now I jumped to action. And so far, 17 years in, nothing has laid a glove on me. Maybe that's a bad way to put it. Nothing has grabbed a hold of me. I've not had a sick day in that entire time because I jump on it with it. So anyway, this is Dr. Eric Berg, The Best Remedy for Your Lungs. And I know a lot of people I'm constantly amazed by the number of people who have asthma that I really wasn't aware of. This is very prevalent as well as things like lung infections.
Today we're going to talk about one of the best remedies for your lungs. And I'm talking about the lower respiratory system. Whether you have a lung infection, or asthma, or even COPD, this could be very beneficial for you. So what do you have in common with these three conditions? Well, you have inflammation, you have an immune reaction, and you have vasoconstriction, where your lungs are tightening and you can't get enough air. And the common treatment for lung conditions is bronchocorticosteroids, okay? The problem is when you take it over time, you become resistant. So in other words, this steroid works less and less and less. Now, the problem with myself, not for a lung infection, but for poison ivy, is when I took steroids every single year through my 20s, I noticed it worked less and less and less, to the point where 1 year it didn't work at all. So the more you use steroids, the more they don't work. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your lungs in relationship to vitamin D. Vitamin D is a very potent remedy for a lot of things, including inflammation in your lungs. However, there's some mixed studies that show some positive results, some less results in relationship to asthma and lung infections. But in general, vitamin D is antimicrobial. It helps modulate or regulate your immune system. And also, it's a powerful anti-inflammatory. It also supports the smooth muscle of your lungs, so it can help you breathe better. But my question is, why would it work in some people but not others? Okay, well, one interesting piece of data you need to know about is this right here. It's called polymorphism. More and more people are becoming aware of this condition in relationship to your vitamin D receptor. Okay, now you can get a genetic test to determine if you have a problem with this. But basically, to make it really simple, your vitamin D receptors are not receiving vitamin D like they should. So even though you're taking a certain amount of vitamin D, whether it's 4,000 international units or 6,000 international units, you may not see the benefits from vitamin D because the receptor is not receiving vitamin D. So that might explain why some people might experience benefits where someone else might not, unless they do this test and find out they need to greatly up the dosage of vitamin D to even 50,000 IUs every single day to see the results. In fact, there was one study, and I'm going to put a lot of studies down below. You can look these up, where they use 50,000 international units of vitamin D every single day for a few months, and they showed great results with asthma. But the point is that if you have a problem with your vitamin D receptor, the normal amounts of vitamin D are not going to be effective. Then there's something else, infrared, okay? Infrared light therapy has been used for a lot of things. It can actually inhibit bronchoconstriction and help you breathe better. It's a powerful anti-inflammatory. It can even help decrease fibrosis in COPD. Plus, infrared can actually decrease pollution in the air. All right, and then we have another thing called UV light, okay, ultraviolet light. Ultraviolet light can help sterilize or kill germs. They even use UV in helping purify water or killing microbes in your water pipes. So UV can help decrease pathogens in the air, which might otherwise overload the immune system. All right, so now the big question is, what can you do to combine all of these things at once to have the perfect remedy for your lungs? Well, it just so happens to be the sun, okay? The sun gives you UV light. It also gives you UVB radiation that actually helps you increase vitamin D naturally, and it's very inexpensive. It's actually free. The sun also gives you infrared therapy. So that's naturally built into the sun, which has a direct effect on the lungs and inflammation and your immune system, as well as stimulating melatonin. Okay, now I'm talking about melatonin in the mitochondria, not the pineal gland, which is a whole different topic. I'm talking about the other benefit of how infrared can increase melatonin in all of your cells. And so this is something new that you may have never heard about before, but melatonin has another function other than helping you sleep at night. It has a powerful antioxidant function in all of the cells in the mitochondria. It has a lot of benefits. One is for the immune system. There's another study that shows that it can actually help decrease coughing, okay? So getting more sun can give you all of these benefits. Also, one side note, vitamin D helps decrease corticosteroid resistance. So if you've used steroids in the past and they don't work, vitamin D can help correct and reverse some of that. Now, here's some things you need to know about the sun. Obviously, you don't want to go out in the sun until you burn, right? You want to get a certain dose of the sun, the spectrum of the sun, to the point where maybe you get a little bit of a tan, but not overdoing it. Now, one really interesting thing. When you walk into the woods, all right, you'll see a lot of green plants below the canopy of trees. So you'll see them in the shade growing fine. And you're probably wondering, now I thought it takes the sunlight to make chlorophyll, this green stuff in the plant. Well, it just so happens that this wavelength, infrared, can penetrate through this canopy of tree layer and go right down into these other plants. It can also penetrate through your clothing, all right? It can actually penetrate through your skull, about 2 inches into your brain, and it goes into your body. So that being said, you don't always have to get skin exposure from the sun. Just by being out in the sun, even if you have a hat, sunglasses, and layers, that infrared will penetrate your clothing and get into your body and improve your lungs.
All right, that's all the time we got for that. I'm about to run out of time. It's very interesting. The sun and all of its mechanisms, and yet we've been told for the last 50 years by our establishment to run from the sun. It's hell-bent on our destruction. I will also tell you, a lot of these sunscreens block some of these beneficial things, so pay attention to what is also in your sunscreen. That's all the time I got today. Got to go.
No
see you tomorrow.
How
bye-bye.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.